And now, coming to you from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting throughout the multiverse, the Nine Realms, Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, Nidaveller, basically anywhere that has the internet, really, we proudly present Radio Free Asgard.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 202. And we're coming at you this week, not from the gleaming spires of Chicago, but from the glaciers, the waterfalls, the mountains, and the boiling mud pits of Iceland, where I am as you listen to these words, unless you're listening to these words after I get back. So it's funny to think, you know, I'm recording this a couple of weeks ahead, and at this point in time, I will have already met Robert, who's one of our listeners. So, of course, I'm going to have to give a big shout out here to Robert Pels, who has been listening to me for longer than I've been doing this show. He's a follower of the Tom Harris USA show, all of which are still online if you want to go back and listen to them. If you really miss me that much, you can find my old shows over at TomHarrisUSA.com. But anyway, so that's enough about Iceland for right now. We do actually have an issue here to cover, and I need to get right to it because it's kind of a long one. It's an extra size issue here. We are, this week, taking a look at the final chapter of the Eighth Day with the Juggernaut Eighth Day Special Number 1. And the cover art on this is by Adam Kubert, inked by somebody named Townsend, who I really don't know. And it shows Juggernaut and the other members of the Octessence, and they're looming threateningly in the foreground. And while in the background, it looks like we have the unconscious forms of Iron Man, Professor X, Thor, and Spider-Man. Part 4 of 4. Of the Eighth Day. And this was released, incidentally, with a November 1999 cover date. Opening up to the openings, it's not really the splash page at this point, but we have the opening page. We show the various heroes in their struggle against the Stonecutter. If you remember, he's building this enormous machine underneath the Daily Bugle building. You know, I kind of get why he would need to build this giant machine to make the Octessence all super powerful and all that. But the only reason why they had to put it beneath the Daily Bugle building was because they had to tie this into Spider-Man somehow. The impossible has become a reality. Four heroes ensnared against their will. Their names are legend. The invincible Iron Man, the mighty Thor, God of Thunder, the amazing Spider-Man, the mutant telepath and founder of the Uncanny X-Men, Professor Charles Xavier. Trapped by mystical technology, a construct that by all accounts should not exist, lest the heavens fall. Helpless to do anything save observe the ancient and terrifying new beings that now walk the earth. If they're ancient, how can they be new? Anyway. Meet Stonecutter, the builder exemplar empowered by the ringed ruby of Ragador, and the architect of this phase of a greater, more insidious scheme.
Our meddling captives have done nothing to slow our progress. I have made the proper adjustments and compensations.
And remember, they had foiled the Octessence's plan last episode of the giant machine that they all four of them kind of wrecked. And so now they're attached to this giant gold, I can only call it a penis because that's what it is. It's this giant gold dick. And it has these sort of knobs around the head of the dick. And each of the heroes is stuck to one of these little knobs that are sticking out here. And this is his god machine. not so subtle there. And now we get the credits. First of all, to get the title of the story, Eight is Enough, which I remember that TV show. Joe Casey was the writer. Terry Shoemaker was the penciler. Scott Hanna was the inker. Mark Bernardo was the colorist. Mike Heisler is the letterer. Bobby Chase was the editor. And Bob Harris was the editor-in-chief. And we have a note from the editor here that explains that the first part of the story was in Iron Man number 22, Thor number 17, Iron Man 23, Peter Parker, Spider-Man 11. So you can go back and read those, or you can just listen to past episodes of this show where we cover those. And so we have this, like I said, giant gold penis, and we have Stonecutter. He says, "The God Machine stands ready." And we cut to the heroes, and we have Professor X. He's communicating telepathically with them. "Thor, Iron Man, are you picking up my thoughts?" "Aye," thinks Thor. "'Tis my mind only that functions in this godly entrapment."
"I'm here, Professor."
"My telepathy can allow us to communicate, and hopefully plan a course of action."
"I just can't believe we're underneath the Daily Bugle building," thinks Spider-Man. "It's supposed to be solid bedrock down here."
Oh, and Dr. Man is here as well, as is the heroes.
If I may.
"Yes, Dr. Man."
"I fear the natural physics have no place here, eh? This machine for the moment exists in a state of interdimensional unreality. The power of these beings must know no bounds."
And we shift to Stonecutter, and the watery, airy woman is there, and she's like,
"Having trouble?"
"None whatsoever, Tempest. The wager of the Octessence will be enacted. I have found a way to override the need for the missing component. There is a place on this earth where the power of this machine will be amplified to its fullest extent. Our journey begins now. Our destiny awaits."
As Stonecutter grasps a lever and pulls, reality bends around them, warping both the matter and the space of the massive god machine, causing it to disappear from underneath Midtown Manhattan, and to magically reappear at the North Pole. Where's Santa Claus? I don't see him. Anyway.
"It is done," says Stonecutter.
And so we have all the Octessences here, and like, huh? And Inferno's like, "Ice and snow, the cold, I hate the cold." And Tempest is like,
"Ignore Inferno's whining. I, for one, am grateful to be closer to such raw nature. Well done."
"Save your compliments," says Stonecutter. "A grand war awaits us all. After some final adjustments in the central core, the god machine will serve its purpose."
At that moment, within the pulsating cauldron that is the central core chamber, the other four exemplars play their roles in this cosmic drama.
And we have Bedlam and Decay and Carnivore and the other chick whose name I can't remember.
"Very soon will Stonecutter activate this infernal device, sapping the pathetic human race of its free will," says Carnivore, "thus allowing our wager to explode into precious violence."
"You dare not speak too soon, Carnivore," says Decay.
"Think twice before touching me, Decay. You will get yours on the god's battlefield, most definitely."
"All things go the way of entropy. Case in point."
And we have the warrior, Bedlam, I think her name is.
"By the sultry chains of Kraken, if it's violence you seek, Conquest will happily provide it."
Oh, Conquest, not Bedlam. Sorry.
"Fine with me, Vench. Let the preliminaries begin."
And they get ready to square off against each other, but they both get these really horrible, horrible headaches. And he's like, "Oh,
argh, my brain is on fire."
"Without using words, so speaks Bedlam, exemplar of Icon. Her madness is indeed a quiet madness, although conversation can be like a mental assault. Delightful."
When gods bicker, humanity trembles, however. Back at the base of the terrible god machine, we have the other four exemplars here.
"Kinda hot," says Juggernaut.
"It's necessary to stave off the cold, Juggernaut," says Inferno. "It makes me curious as to why we are here. To put me at a disadvantage, perhaps?"
"Your paranoia is quite amusing, Inferno," says Stonecutter. "But this location provides the ideal planetary focal point to maximize the power of the god machine. The polar electromagnetism coupled with the mystical ley lines that intersect here will ensure the ultimate subjugation of humanity, allowing our war to commence uninterrupted. A beautiful thing indeed."
And we cut back to our heroes, who are still communicating telepathically, and we get the sort of floaty headshot of the heroes' heads surrounding Professor Xavier. And Spider-Man, of course, is cracking wise. This has got AT&T beat by a mile.
Spider-Man, please, says Professor X.
Sorry, Prof.
All the signs, all the glyphs pointed to this, eh? And now what's happening?
Quit rambling, Dr. Man. It's obvious that our arrival here at the North Pole can only mean one thing. That these exemplars mean to somehow affect the entire planet.
And all of a sudden, Thor starts to... looks like he's convulsing or something. And going, eeeh! And he's thinking to himself, or thinking through the telepathic link and all that.
By Asgard, all my godly might is not enough to break this containment. This power involved here rivals that of the Allfather Odin.
It's no use, Thor, says Professor X. Brute force will not free you. The key to action is my stepbrother, Cain Marco. As the Juggernaut, he is obviously the exemplar of Sidorak, transformed years ago by a gem buried within an ancient Korean temple. For all his flaws, Cain has never professed to being either a world conqueror or the pawn of a great mystic being. His role in all of this may just be our salvation, but as to what role will be, who can say?
And the narrator says, excellent question, Professor Xavier. Only one man knows the answer, and at this moment that man appears to be in no condition to answer anything. Of course, as with all things, the answer lies within. Deep within. And we get a kind of a full-page spread here. And these are things here that are going on inside the Juggernaut's head. So he's got this whole dialogue between him and Sidorak going on in his head.
Feeling nauseous, frantic one? Well, don't, because we've merely entered the dark recesses of the Juggernaut's mind. At the moment, a frightening place to be.
And we see basically the origin of the Juggernaut. We see Cain Marco having crashed his Jeep or whatever that, it looks like a Jeep. And he's running through Korea, and it looks like he's being fired at by Russian MiG airplanes. And he's like, gotta get out of here. And we see the form of Sidorak, who is actually kind of shaped like the Juggernaut. He has the same basic, that kind of round dome head like the Juggernaut's helmet. And he's got these sort of antennas sticking up out of his shoulders. And you get the Sidorak going,
pathetic human host, pawn of Sidorak.
And we see the Juggernaut here, and he's had the gem in his hand, and the gem is kind of flying out of his hand here.
You seek a way out? You are mine, body and soul, and ever will you remain.
Whoa, you thinking you're going to push Cain Marco around? You better wise up, Pally, because I'm running the party here.
So Marco is actually fighting back against Sidorak's will, and he's taking the form of him basically hammering on Sidorak. I should mention that, you know, he's the Juggernaut here on this page, but he doesn't have his helmet on, so you can actually see his face.
Foolish transient mortal, you are nothing before my power!
And he smashes Cain Marco back, and he's like, ugh.
Remember the gem, the source of your transformation, my doing! Whosoever touches this gem shall possess the power of the crimson bands of Sidorak. Henceforth, you who read these words shall become forevermore a human juggernaut.
And we see during all of this, you know, his transformation to the Juggernaut going on in kind of background.
Thanks for the history lesson, ugly, but history don't mean nothing to me now.
And he punches Sidorak and doesn't seem to have a lot of effect on him, but it, I guess, staggers him back.
What's next? You gonna tell me my favorite color?
You were the luckiest mortal in existence to so freely walk this earth as the spell of the Octestans finds its way. But that time has come. And you dare challenge me? I give you purpose. I give you strength. Your arrogance deserves a lesson in cosmic humility, one that only I can provide. Your hour of reckoning is at hand.
And Sidorak reaches out and with his hand and just kind of smashes the Juggernaut. The Juggernaut's like, arg!
Yes, now you will see the levels of power involved. Release your humanity as you wage war on your fellow exemplars. Victory will belong to Cytorak! Ha!
And we cut back to, you know, where the villains are standing around. And the Juggernaut has kind of fallen to his knees at this point. And so finally somebody notices, the Inferno notices that something is going on here. He's like, huh? What is happening to the Juggernaut? It seems as though one of our Octessans is feeling under the weather. Doesn't look like he's going to be up for our wager. I think he's dying. And Tempest is like, let him perish. One less combatant in the coming war. I curse Cytorak and his crimson bands.
Silence. Activation time is near, says the Stonecutter.
And we see Professor X is kind of watching what's going on here mentally.
That's it. My friends, observe my stepbrother's dilemma. I believe he's actively fighting the god being which empowers him. This could be our only chance.
No offense, Prof, says Spider-Man, but I never thought that old Juggy would end up on the side of the angels.
Verily, says Thor, my combat with thine sibling shook the pillars of Midgard. Thus was he a creature of pure malice.
I have to agree with Thor, Professor Xavier. We can't trust the Juggernaut to switch sides after years of treachery, nor should we expect it.
If I may, your frame of reference is all wrong, eh? The beings we're dealing with cannot necessarily be judged in terms of good and evil. Those are human terms, eh? Not applicable here.
You're mistaken, Dr. Mann. My stepbrother has always been a creature of malice. If he was indeed mystically drawn to the temple in Korea, then he was destined to fuse with the power of Cytorak. But since that time, it has been Kane's personality that has been dominant until these others appeared.
But that was years ago. How is it that the spell that drew the other seven exemplars to their respective temples failed to activate when King Marco became the Juggernaut?
I believe I can answer that, eh? Says Dr. Mann. With the Korean temple being shelled at the time of its discovery, the various mystic symbols and patterns probably got knocked out of alignment, unable to activate as they should have. Now, if they're carved in stone, how did they get knocked out of alignment? That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Dr. Mann, I appreciate your knowledge of the situation, but the time has come to act. Normally, I would be unable to penetrate my brother's psyche, but in his weak and confused state, I may be able to sneak in. This may be the one opportunity to reach him.
And so Professor X sends his astral form out, it says hurling from his mind like a bullet, and he strikes the Juggernaut, who kind of reacts a little bit. And we see Professor X in his astral form kind of going deeper and deeper into Kane Marco's subconscious. And it's playing out like scenes from their past. And so Professor X is this kind of glowing pink ghost. And he's in his teenage form here.
This house. The house Kane and I grew up in. Obviously a psychic projection within his mind. I never would have expected this. Good Lord, I'm a teenager. I've never seen my astral form manifest in this manner. How did this happen?
Take my bags upstairs, and don't drop them.
And Marco comes and he slams Xavier on the shoulders, knocks him down, and this is teenage Kane Marco.
And if you're wondering what I'm doing here, I just got expelled from school. I decided there wasn't anything else those creeps could teach me.
It's Kane, as I first met him as a child. Now, how is this happening?
Here, Squirt. Look at my hand. I'll show you a trick.
And while he's saying that, he's actually smashing a chair over his head, which I guess his trick is bashing him over the head with a chair.
I'm not in control here, says Xavier. Completely at his mercy. Unless I can get my bearings, I'll never be able to reach him.
Ha! That'll teach you not to stand around with your dumb-looking face hanging out.
I can see that my only recourse is to goad him, incite him to anger.
And he kicks him, the astral form kicks Kane in the stomach, and he's like, oof. And as they're fighting, Professor X starts to look more and more like his adult self, so he turns bald and he gets bigger.
I can slowly feel it working. He has reverted to a simple psychic construction to avoid the true conflict with Cytorak. But his rage is the key to his freedom. And I'm fairly certain that I'm the one person able to bring it out of him.
And he punches him in the face, and of course Kane fights back.
No bratty stepbrother of mine's going to cause any trouble now. I've been hoping for years that you'd try something like that. Now you've given me the excuse I wanted.
Yes, Kane. Let it all go. Don't hold back the hate you feel for me. With each passing moment, you gain the resolve you need.
And now, little brother, it's your turn.
And he goes grappling him with a like a wrestler here. And they're kind of fighting along here. And we see what's going on briefly on the outside. The Octessans are draining power from the god machine. And there's this green Kirby crackle shooting out. And they're just kind of standing there bathing in it. It turns out that Bedlam has actually noticed what Xavier is doing. It says, but in the central core chamber, Xavier's efforts are not going unnoticed. She has a need for knowledge. This war to prove her patron god's superiority is merely an obstacle that Bedlam's is sure she will maneuver with ease, as easily as she will ferret out this curious psychic ripple, discover its source, and eliminate it. So Bedlam goes off to find Xavier. She need not look far, but merely within the mind of her fellow exemplar. And the two of them are still grappling, kind of hand to hand.
You creepy punk! You're better than I am in sports and studies and almost everything. And now I've got the top hand.
The house he constructed is dissolving around us. He's regaining control. Now if I can just direct his newfound energy against Sitarak. Wait, something else in his mind. Extremely powerful. Can't maintain. Yarg!
And it's Bedlam kind of pushing Xavier out of Kane's mind.
The pain. One of the exemplars must be a telepath of enormous power. His mere proximity was enough to drive me out.
And we shift back to where the exemplars are, and Bedlam seeks to learn the nature of Juggernaut's struggle through a simple mental probe to peel back layers of the mind within, however painful that might be to the Juggernaut himself. And Juggernaut is like,
ah! Get your big head out of my face! You're killing me!
What's going on here?
Says Tempest. And Bedlam doesn't say anything. It's like she's sending this mental blast at the other people. It's causing them headaches again. And Tempest's like, never mind, never mind.
She cannot communicate without inflicting agony, says Stonecutter. She will be a formidable opponent in the coming war.
And we shift to Iron Man. He's like,
Xavier, are you all right? Can you read me?
I'm shaken, but unharmed.
And we see now that Xavier is conscious again.
Did it work? Asks Dr. Mann.
Not as well as I'd hoped. I was cast out before I could judge the true results.
And Thor is still trying to struggle his way free of the penis here.
Odd's blood. Try as I might, I'm still unable to move. This collective will rue the day they dared enslave the Thunder God, and my wrath will be quick and furious.
And Spider-Man is like,
I can appreciate trash-talking as much as the next guy, Thor, but maybe with a little more thinking and a little less flexing. Hey, you're not going to hit me with lightning for what I just said, are you?
And we shift back to Xavier.
I can't accurately speculate as to what effect my presence had on Kane's dilemma, but I can say with some certainty that I felt his own personality regaining control. With a bit more time within...
You can't go back in there, Prof. You don't look like you can handle it, says Spider-Man.
I think what Xavier is trying to say is that if this is going to work, if the Juggernaut is going to break free, he's going to have to do it on his own.
And we shift to the Octessans, and Inferno's like,
anyone else notice the Juggernaut looking a little distracted?
He is weak, says Tempest. We should take this opportunity to kill him now and get this war started.
Not just yet, says Stonecutter. The free will of the human race must be obliterated. Don't allow your impatience to spoil whatever has been prophesied. In moments, we will be ready.
And we cut back to the Juggernaut's head, and we see inside he's still fighting with Sidorak, but he's looking a bit stronger now, and Sidorak is looking smaller and not quite as imposing as he did before.
This is it! Nobody tells King Marco what to do.
Fool! You are no match for me! I am your master, says Sidorak. This contest of wills has one outcome, the destruction of your soul.
Ain't nobody my master, ugly. I got my own business to attend to, and it sure don't involve you or your stupid schemes. You're gonna have to learn that right now.
And Juggernaut punches Sidorak right in the face, and he kicks him and it knocks him down and just kind of drives him right into the ground. And Sidorak now is pissed, and he's got all this energy, like, leaking out of his head, and is all, like, fire and shit.
Curse the Octosense and our wager! The subjugation of my exemplar is now the focus of my fire! By my own crimson bands, you will burn and die, mortal!
And he's shooting, like, fire out of his hands, and Cain Marco's like, Yarg!
Yes! Now you know the true nature of my power! Your pathetic life is nothing in the shadow of my being. Your entire existence, your petty ambitions, all for naught. It will be as though you never existed. Finally, you see, from the moment you touched my fabled gem, you are mine now and forever. As my exemplar, you have achieved your destiny. As a human being, you are nothing.
And he drives him down into like this big puddle of lava. But then the Juggernaut rises up, and his eyes are glowing, and he looks almost like he's more powerful than ever. And he's starting to getting these weird weird speech bubbles that make it look like he's a lot more powerful.
Nice speech. Now that I've tasted your worst and seeing that it ain't nothing, I'm taking it all back. This is gonna be good.
And Sidorak's like, no! We cut back to the outside, and we see Stonecutter. He's doing his energy draining thing with his god machine, and he gets tapped on the shoulder by a familiar-looking hand.
Oh, Stonecutter!
Who dares?
Take a wild guess. Oh, yeah!
And Juggernaut smashes Stonecutter's head into the god machine.
Don't think I didn't see you back there, Bedlam. And before you can give me another headache, you need to take five.
And he reaches back and clobbers Bedlam right in the face with a clud and knocks him back, or knocks her back, so she's flying away towards Inferno here. Inferno's like,
what in Sidorak's exemplar has gone insane? Look out!
And there's this big, a foomp as Bedlam falls into the energy of the god machine and just kind of falls off this big tower thing into the snow.
Bedlam's out of the picture, says Tempest.
The war begins,
says Inferno.
You idiot! We have to activate the god machine first!
God machine, eh? We'll see about that!
And Juggernaut jumps up and he starts ripping the machine apart just with his bare hands. And you can see Stonecutter still trying to pull his head out of the machine where Juggernaut punched it. And he's just ripping the machine apart, and there's energies crackling out all over the place. And we get a little narration here.
Like a runaway train, the unstoppable Juggernaut launches himself into the air, tearing into the delicate construct. Waves of mystical energy buckle and quiver under the onslaught of his assault. The powers of the machine begin to fluctuate, including the spell holding our heroes prisoner.
And Thor is the first to be able to recover from this. He's like,
comrades! The containment doth weaken. I can move. And if the Thunder God can move, then enchanted Mjolnir can finish the job. My friends, follow suit and join me in pitched battle.
And Thor takes Mjolnir and he just smashes the knob thing that he's tied to or stuck to with a thoom. And as he does that, then Iron Man is able to get free as well. And Iron Man's like, I'm out too. And Spider-Man's like,
whoa. Let the games begin.
And Dr. Man is falling, and he has to speak the obvious. Oh my god, I'm falling, eh? And Spider-Man swings over and grabs him. He's like, no worries, Doc. I gotcha. And Iron Man and Thor are flying off towards the Octessens.
First order of business is to neutralize the exemplars. This won't be an easy fight.
Aye, says Thor. Now let us enter the fray like warriors. For Midgard!
And we cut to the Juggernaut, who's still inside the machine. He's really tearing it all apart in there. And he's like,
yeah, baby, feels good.
We cut to the Stonecutter, and he's back, you know, where the Juggernaut smashed him. And he's like,
hid from behind by Ragador. No matter what has occurred, I must activate the god machine at all costs. Repairs must be made.
And he starts working on fixing the machine again. And Tempest is like,
finally, Stonecutter can take his patience and choke on it. Now we can cut loose and show this planet what we can do. I want the tin-plated one, says Inferno.
And she goes smashing into Iron Man. And he's thinking to himself,
Here we go again. Hopefully I'll fare better than I did in Canada. Need to try and forget that she used to be mild-mannered Samantha McGee. Was she really that mild-mannered as Samantha McGee? It seems like she was kind of a depressed bitch, but anyway.
How about the weather witch, says Thor, and he hurls Mjolnir at her, but, you know, Mjolnir just passes through because, you know, she's cloudy, watery woman.
Ha! Do you really think you can hurt me? I am the nature exemplar, empowered by the great Watoom. Watch this!
And she dissipates entirely, but not quite entirely, because she re-emerges behind him. And Spider-Man is saying, okay, why do I get this feeling this is going to smart? You two hang there. I need to help the big guns.
No argument here, eh? Says Dr. Man.
Didn't think there would be, Doc.
Spider-Man, wait, says Professor X. The Juggernaut, he's the key to this conflict.
But Spider-Man doesn't hear him. He goes bounding off anyway. And he's going to go attack Stonecutter. And Stonecutter is still trying to activate the machine. And he's like, almost there.
Oh, no, you don't, Granite Puss. Time to take the friendly at a friendly neighborhood.
And he kicks him, but doesn't have any effect. And he's like, ow, that's one tough hide, Pally.
Meddling insect, normally I would fashion a tool that would grind your bones to powder. But you were unworthy of such attention. Begone!
And he starts whipping him around by his foot and hurls him off the tower, off into the ice and snow of the North Pole.
Begone!
And we then shift to Thor, who's fighting Tempest, and he's like, our storms are well met, woman.
You have no idea of the level of my power.
Aye, but combat is not decided by power alone, as I use your own wind and rain against you. The Thunder God strikes!
And he just goes just out and punches her right in the face with a crack.
You're holding back, Thor. Don't you get it? I'm a demigod. Your schemes are nothing.
And we then cut to Inferno and Iron Man, and they're fighting in the sky, and she's burning really, really hot, and Iron Man is thinking to himself, she's heating up again, but this time I'm ready for it. My circuits will adapt. No overload this time.
Can you feel my hate, Iron Man? Feel it!
At least I hope I'm right. My God, she's generating 10 times the heat she was before. If I don't do something, all my preparations won't mean a thing. There's only one thing I can do now. And he just flies straight down into the ice with a poof. And you know, the ice is just melting right in front of them because the heat is so much and they're going down into the water. And we have the Juggernaut as he's kind of bursting his way through this machine, just smashing a path of destruction through the God Machine, going towards the Central Core Chamber. No longer a pawn of Sitarak, this is truly Cain Marco venting his anger. But he is halted in his tracks by the mystical technology ahead of him suddenly disintegrates into dust.
Cease and desist, exemplar of physical power!
And you're supposed to be...
I am decay, in every way you could possibly imagine. My fingers, your head, the result will change your entire life.
I ain't doubting that. No thanks, but I got an alternate suggestion for you. How about I send you back to the lagoon? You want to see some physical power? How's this?
And he takes the wall of the God Machine, he just smashes it right down on top of Decay, and Decay is like, arg! And then we cut to outside, and we're in the ice and snow, and Thor manages to find Spider-Man, and he's grabs him out of the ice.
Spider-Man, art thou
cold and wet with a splitting headache? Yeah, but I'll live.
Huh, where's Iron Man? And Iron Man appears holding the unconscious, apparently unconscious body of Inferno.
Right here, says Iron Man. The shock and the impact takes care of Inferno here, but only momentarily. We need to press the advantage. Thor, the base of the construct.
Aye, comrade. This conflict serves no immediate purpose when the true threat is the activation of this infernal device.
The time is now,
says Stonecutter, and he goes to activate the machine, which is... I don't understand how he can really do that. We saw the Juggernaut really ripped a lot of the insides of it out.
Let the God Machine sing!
And there's all this green Kirby crackle flying around, and Thor's like,
I say thee nay! 'Tis enchanted Mjolnir that will sing this day.
Hurls Mjolnir, just smashes through the control panel of the God Machine
with a scratch.
And Stonecutter's like, no!
and the energy is all kind of spilling out, and the giant gold penis starts to collapse, and it's smashing down into this tower of ice at the North Pole, and we see the heroes, and they're suddenly being affected by the really powerful telepathic blast, and of course that's Bedlam, and everyone's like, argh. And she's kind of reaching into their minds and just squeezing their minds to death. And Professor X and Dr. Man are watching, and Dr. Man's like, good Lord, she's killing me.
That is the exemplar that ejected me from Kane's subconscious. Let's find out how powerful a telepath she really is.
And Professor X shoots out this kind of mystical blast, and he's fighting against Bedlam.
A war of wills! Two titanic telepaths locked in mortal combat. Xavier has the advantage, the element of surprise, thus allowing the heroes to break free from Bedlam's grip of mental madness.
And we see, you know, Spider-Man, Iron Man, and Thor. They're all recovering here. And Iron Man is thinking to himself,
the only way we'll survive is if we can use the opportunities presented to us. With the excess energy stored in my armor from Inferno's attack, I can charge up a repulsor blast that should knock our big-headed friend here for a loop.
And he shoots out this enormous repulsor blast, big purple Kirby crackly repulsor blast, knocks Bedlam flying just right through the wall of the God Machine with a crash. So that seems to be the end of Bedlam. And then we cut to Stonecutter, who is kind of where the ruins of the control panel were. And he's like,
they think they can foil the Octessens. Our destiny is eons old. By Ragador, I am the Builder Exemplar. From the ashes of setback, I shall forge victory. As always, these humans underestimate my power. I will activate the God Machine from the central core. Humanity will fall before the final chaos of our war.
That sounded pretty convincing, says Iron Man.
Aye, says Thor. We must make haste to the central core chamber and thwart this conclave.
Easier said than done, says Spider-Man. I gotta tell you, these guys are out of my league. Way out.
More importantly, Kane is in the core chamber. If this battle is to be won, then it is the Juggernaut who will turn the tide in our favor.
And we cut to Juggernaut, and he's fighting against, the violent one. I don't remember her name. Conquest. He's fighting against her, and they're just kind of trading blows back and forth. And, yeah, because, you know, she's the fighting machine. He's the Juggernaut, basically. So, yeah. And she's like,
insolent beast, you will be the first to fall by my unholy skills in this greatest of wars.
And she's hammering the Juggernaut and actually, you know, kind of hurting him. And he's like,
not bad, sister, but don't forget who you're messing with.
And he just socks her in the face with a clod and knocks her out.
Whew, that wasn't exactly easy.
But he doesn't see that there's a dark figure lurking above him. And, of course, it turns out to be
Carnivore. Minion of Citarac, your death is at hand. So swears Carnivore.
Oh, yeah? Well, let's do it, ugly.
Ooh, oh, my. And the two of them are going back and forth. Says,
Carnivore's attack is as vicious as it is effective, slashing and scoring the Juggernaut's armor like no other has ever done before. So swift are his claws, there seems to be no defense against them. However,
the Juggernaut kind of headbutts him right in the forehead with a clunk, and of course, you know, Juggernaut's wearing his big helmet.
You kind of remind me of a runt Canadian I know, but this'll slow you down.
And looks like he may have knocked the Carnivore out, but all of a sudden he's like,
my brain! Like someone sticking a hot needle into it! Ugh.
And Carnivore's like,
Arr! What? Who is doing this?
And the answer is it's Bedlam. He's doing the sort of brain blast thing against both of them. And Marco's like,
you could have just said hello.
And she keeps blasting the two of them. So basically she's trying to slow these two of them down, keep them from destroying the machine so that Stonecutter can get to the main chamber and start it up again. We have Stonecutter here, and he's like,
well done, Bedlam. As always, our story becomes one of high drama. Such is the way of gods. And such is the way it will ever be, as I finally activate the God Machine. Millennia ago, a wager was entered into,
a wager to prove which mystical being was most powerful. Temples were constructed, exemplars created. We are those exemplars, and we have finally come together to enact this ceremony. The Octessence, to create a great mystic machine to wipe out all human free will. The ensuing war would prove once and for all whose power was the greatest. That day of judgment has finally arrived.
You can't, says Juggernaut.
I must tell you, as exemplar of Ragador, you have shamed Sitarak. You belong to him, yet you sully the light of his crystal. His control over your existence is rapidly...
No! I don't belong to anybody but me, says Juggernaut, and I'm going to prove it once and for all.
What? Bedlam, have you?
And Juggernaut just smashes into the Stonecutter, as carries him backward into the machine, just is smashing everything in their path. And the two of them are fighting hand to hand, and you can see the like the every time they hit each other is like these big shock waves come out.
When demigods clash, never has such fury been unleashed upon the natural world as mighty exemplars pound away at each other mercilessly. No concern is given to the surrounding landscape, which shudders and shakes with each successive impact. Even the mighty god machine begins to splinter apart.
Well, it seems to me that it's been splintering apart for this whole issue, but I guess that wasn't part of the script.
Between these two, no quarter is asked and none given.
I refuse to even waste my tools on you, Juggernaut, says Stonecutter.
Whatever. Get you through the night.
But this is war, after all, where allegiances can change on a dime. Bedlam sees her opportunity to rid herself of two of her competitors in her bid to rule the world. But even as the exemplar of the mind learns that there is willpower that dwarfs even her own, and these dueling titans are seemingly immune to her telepathic attacks, nothing will be stopping them on this day, no matter if the earth crumbles and falls.
Curse you, exemplar of Sitarak! You will die by my hand!
Not by yours or anyone else's!
And Juggernaut's still headbutting the Stonecutter. It says here, Bedlam says a silent curse to herself, unable to affect the outcome of this battle. But she suddenly discovers that there are other concerns to attract her attention. And we see Professor X's astral form kind of floating around out here.
Thank heavens, Kane has regained his dominance over his psyche. Perhaps I can help him somehow.
And Bedlam decides to attack Professor X's mind and uses her mind to smash Professor X's mind back into his body. And we shift to our heroes. Professor X is like,
oh, I'm relatively unharmed. We must strive to end this crisis, says Thor.
I'm sure the other exemplars are skulking around here somewhere. Professor Xavier, anything to report?
And kind of over here on the side, Dr. Man is like, the God Machine, the energy being admitted beyond all human comprehension, eh? I'm beyond certain that the fate of the entire world will be decided on this day.
We've got to get clear, as far as possible, says Xavier. What is Kane doing? We need to go now.
You heard the man. Let's move, people.
And so Iron Man picks up Xavier's chair, and Thor picks up Dr. Man, and Spider-Man just latches a ride in the bottom of Xavier's chair. He's like, yeah, wait for me, guys. And the heroes go away, and in the meantime, the God Machine is like shaking and getting ready to, it looks like it's getting ready to explode.
As the heroes speed away with no guarantee of reaching a safe distance, the massive God Machine continues to shudder above them, and unmeasurable amounts of mystic energy spew forth from the central core chamber. Whether or not any of them has realized it, the War of the Exemplars has indeed been declared. And Kane Marco, utilizing the very power that links him to his adversaries, fights on for the survival of the human race. And looks like this big core area is getting ready to blow up. And Bedlam starts to attack them with her mind again. And she realizes as she's doing that the outcome of the war is near being decided.
You will fall, says Stonecutter.
Don't think so. This is my last chance. I decided a while ago better to die free than to live on as a pathetic pawn like you.
And he pushes the Stonecutter back into the core and destroys the core. And there's this big, huge chain reaction, a big explosion. We see the, like, streamers of color being shot out. And that's the exemplars that are, I guess, their energy forms. And it says, using his last ounce of strength, the Juggernaut hurls his opponent backward directly into the core of the God Machine, destroying it, and immediately setting off a chain reaction that sends mystical energy tearing through the rest of the God Machine, sweeping up the very essences of all eight exemplars. It's an explosion that makes no sound. It's the release of otherworldly energy like nothing the world has seen for millennia. In one brilliant, incandescent moment, the God Machine is no more. And the giant gold penis explodes! And there's like all this green Kirby crackle, and the exemplars go flying off into space like they're like fireworks or, you know, streamers or something. And I guess they just get sent to far corners of the earth is what it says here.
Good lord.
Verily, it appears this threat is done, says Thor. I have summoned a rainstorm to quell the mystic fires left in its wake.
Nice work, everyone, says Iron Man.
Thor, says Spider-Man, as long as you're working the weather angle, think you could do something about the cold?
Aye, fabled Mjolnir can quell the Arctic winds around us.
I think I can help out there, too, says Iron Man. I can rig my power couplings to provide a temporary heat source.
Ingenious idea, eh? Says Dr. Man. Thanks, guys. No wonder you guys are Avengers.
Gentlemen, today we have witnessed what no other humans have ever seen, eh? But I fear the exemplars have not been banished from this Earth. But at least humanity will endure, says Dr. Man.
Aye. Our triumph this day shall not be soon forgotten, says Thor.
Not by me, that's for sure, says Spider-Man. Maybe we can start thinking about getting back to civilization, huh?
Thy words are not lost on me, Spider-Man. I have pressing business concerning the All-Father Odin that I must return to. However, I shall not abandon my comrades until suitable transportation arrives.
Working on that right now, says Iron Man. I'm putting a call in to Stark Solutions. They'll find someone ASAP. Professor Xavier, any idea of the status of the Juggernaut?
I know Kane still lives. I can still sense him telepathically. But I am unable to pinpoint a location, I'm afraid.
And I suppose that Dr. Man is right in assuming that these other exemplars may return someday.
We must remain ever vigilant, hence their evil rise again, says Thor. What has been averted here must never be allowed to resurface, lest Midgard and its sacred humanity be sacrificed. For if the Juggernaut still lives, the threat survives as well.
And that is the end of the eighth day, and we'll be talking a little bit about that right after this message.
Star Trek. Comic books. Mythology. Video games. Toys. Star Wars. Just about any geeky topic you can think of could be covered on the Hammer Podcast, presented by two true freaks. Come join me, Gene Hendricks, for whatever my disjointed mental processes can come up with. And be careful, or you might just learn something before we're done. The Hammer Podcast is available monthly, both on its own iTunes feed and at twotruefreaks.com.
And we are back, and so I have just a few words here about the eighth day in general, and this Juggernaut issue in particular. And what I have to say about the story, well, it may not come as a surprise, but it's not very complimentary. It's just not a very good story. There's a lot of yelling, screaming, and fighting. Yes, I understand. It's a Marvel comic. You got to get that. But this is a 90s comic in every sense, and I don't mean that as a compliment. This is after the extreme 90s is over, and I think the art is like a half step above what you would find in your average extreme 90s type of comic. But the art by Terry Shoemaker is just not good. It's not consistent. There's some nice stuff here and there, and you know, some of the pictures that he drew of Thor were pretty good. You know, he handles action reasonably well, but I'm not sure what he was going for. And it's a shame because Terry Shoemaker is a good artist. I've seen that he can actually do good work. He drew Tales of the Legion of Superheroes back in the early 80s. And, you know, that was the you know, when they had the hardcover, softcover thing going on at DC of the Legion and Teen Titans, and I think it was Batman and the Outsiders were another one, where they would have, you know, new stories in the softcover book for a year. And then after that, they would have reprints of the Baxter stories. You know, you remember how that goes. And Terry Shoemaker was drawing the Legion of Superheroes during that time. And it's nice stuff. And, you know, it was one of the people that came out of the New Talent Showcase program Sal Amendola introduced over at DC. And so I thought that that was, you know, it was a treat to see Terry Shoemaker again until I actually got into the issue and saw that, you know, this is not a great job here. Story-wise, all the characters are about, you know, an eighth of an inch deep. There's, you scratch the surface, there's nothing beneath it. It's hard to tell the voices of the different characters apart, and that makes it hard to read sometimes, especially if you're doing voices like I am, because you're not always sure of who's talking, because the characters are not differentiated enough from each other. They all kind of sound the same. And that's not my idea of a great story, especially when you have 16 characters, or however many you have. I mean, you have a lot of characters, because you've got the, you know, the eight exemplars, you've got Sidorak, you've got Thor, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Professor X, and Dr. Man. So yeah, you were talking about almost 16 characters who all sound alike, and that's just not a good place to be if you're a storyteller. It's a waste of time, in my opinion, to read The Eighth Day. Now, you know, I did it because Thor's in it, and it kind of fits into the continuity, kind of. Now, speaking of that, we've just had four issues of The Eighth Day, and kind of actually four and a half, because we had the half of an Iron Man issue. And all of that took place within a few pages of Thor number 17. Really? I mean, really, this is stretching credulity, and it doesn't fit well into the Thor story at all, which is, after all, that's the continuity we're most interested in, because that's the stuff that we're actually reading. So, yeah, a big disappointment here with The Eighth Day. I'm really kind of sorry that I covered it now. But, you know, then again, you know, it's something probably you're never going to hear on any other show, maybe a quarter bin podcast, because I'm sure these issues have got to be dirt cheap, because they're just not very good. And you know, more's the pity. All right, so with that, it is time to wrap up the show for this week. Once again, folks, thanks very much for listening. Now, next week, we are going to have a mythology program, and it's not, you know, the normal mythology program. It's actually going to be The Complete Norse Mythology Part 2, and people have been asking about when we're going to do a Part 2, and so next week is going to be your Part 2. You're going to have three Norse myths, and it's going to be about 45 minutes long, and I hope you enjoy it. And with that, it's time to hop back over the Rainbow Bridge. Well, not really, because right now I'm relaxing in a hot spring somewhere in Iceland, and I think I'd rather go back there. So I'm back across the friendly skies of Delta Airlines to Iceland, and hot spring next to a volcano and glaciers and seals and all the rest of it. And we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.